are going to hang in there. It is.
That's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome to the show. I'm Charlie Holm. He's Smiley Kaufman. Smiley, I think I need like a better set of intro. I need like a new intro package. I need something better to start the show with. Do you have any like thoughts or ideas there?
Yeah, nothing parts. It's not my forte.
All right. That's good. I feel like I don't really know where to start in terms of voice inflection or the words to say. So listen, if you're out there and you follow us on Twitter or I guess that's X or Instagram, whatever, just send in some new intro ideas. Anyway, that has nothing to do with anything because we're here to preview the 2023 Ryder Cup at Marco Simone. And we are like Ryder Cup Eve. We spent the better part of a month and even the weeks before that previewing this competition, talking about who is going to play, who's not going to play, who's going to make the team. We're here. We have the day one morning pairing set and we are ready to rock. I'm so excited, man. I'm going to wake up early. You're there. So you're going to be on normal time. I'm going to wake up at like midnight or that's a little early. I'm like up like 1 a.m. make a cup of coffee and just like soak it all in, man. Like, tell me,
are you really?
Yeah, I'm doing it start to finish. I feel like I kind of have to.
What time do you go to bed then?
Well, that's another thing that we'll get to at the end of this episode. Is we're gonna be up a little bit late tonight because it is the semifinals of Hope Valley Men's League. Your boys coming off of a big Flight 2 member guest win. The match play juices are flowing. We got the Ryder Cup. Everything's happening at the same time. Okay. Big, big match tonight. If we win, it's going to be a late night and early morning, but that's okay because it's just going to be pure match play adrenaline flowing through my veins. And that's where you like to be heading into the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be alternate coverage that we can tune into that tomorrow morning or something.
I'm surprised we didn't get like a, you know, Golf Channel feed or something like that, or, you know, just like a live stream of sorts. Listen, that could be the Smiley Show 2.0. Maybe we'll have some live coverage of our various matches. But listen, I'm going to stop talking about things that you, the audience member, probably care very little about. And let's start talking about the Ryder Cup and the pairing specifically, because they're announced. We've got some juicy, some really good matchups in this morning session of foursomes. But I think the place that everybody started first were the guys, at least on the U.S. side, who weren't playing. So that's Wyndham Clark, Brooks Koepka, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Thomas. So Smiley, I'm curious both for your reaction of why you think Zach Johnson did it this way. But I'm also, I mean, could you have seen it coming that of the Spring Breakers crew, the guy that was going to play the first session was going to be Ricky Fowler? I mean, that just kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, it's kind of wild, you know, going into this Ryder Cup. I think in my head this whole time, you know, JT was picked not only because of his Ryder Cup record, but how well he's done in foursomes and four balls. Just the fact that those two guys, Jordan and JT, play so well together. And I did have a feeling that Ricky would play in the foursome session. I just didn't think it would be on Friday. I thought he was going to play four ball tomorrow afternoon and then play foursomes the following morning. That's kind of where I thought Ricky would slot in. But not surprising. I think I thought it was a day earlier than what I thought. I'll say this. I am surprised that Brooks is not playing. That's, to me, was really surprising. I really thought him and Colin were going to play together. If not him or Colin, I thought he was going to play with Scotty.
That's the one I think a lot of people were interested in potentially seeing and benching, you know, Burns, who made it kind of by the skin of his teeth.
No, yeah. I'm with you. I definitely see a world in which Scotty and Brooks probably would have looked really good on paper, knowing that's who you're sending off first, knowing that Luke Donald's going to send out his best first, which he really did. You know, he kind of front loaded and back loaded his lineup with Rahm and Hatton and then Rory and Tommy going late. So,
yeah,
I mean, it's going to be they're going to have to play really dang good to beat those two guys.
Do you think there's anything to because JT is probably your highest energy guy on the team, and Jordan and JT, those two guys are just, they're vets. They have a ton of experience. They can be great cheerleaders. Like, is there anything to having those guys roaming the course in the morning, supporting their guys and kind of getting the vibes up?
I don't think they're going to be out there a whole lot. I think you treat the day like a normal afternoon tea time. One of the things that you are allowed to do, so let's say they're playing at 12:30, you can go out and play after that last group if you want to. So like Jordan and JT, Wyndham and Brooks, they can go play. If they want to go play three holes tomorrow just to see how the course is reacting, they're able to do that, which is something that I didn't know was a thing. So if it were me, I would go out, you know, around 9 o'clock, go get a workout in, eat some breakfast, go play three holes, come back, rest, eat some lunch, and then go through your normal warm up. And at that point, you wouldn't really necessarily wear yourself out, but you at least get to see the ball in the air. I would, if you're Wyndham Clark, wouldn't you do that? If you've never played a Ryder Cup before and you just got to do something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it sounds a lot like the Hope Valley Men's League warm up. So I'm just glad to see we're on the same page there as well.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, like, there's nothing you can do as a teammate at that point, that early in the morning, knowing you're playing that afternoon. And buddy, it's hot here. Like it's not cool. It's very warm. And there's just no advantage to being out there watching the guys, unless, you know, you do it like maybe one or two holes, but nothing more than that to conserve your energy.
Yeah, I heard Zach Johnson in his press availability following the pairings announcements talking about how it's the hottest Ryder Cup he's ever experienced. And so that was an interesting one to me. You know, the guy I've been thinking more and more about as being a pivotal piece for this Ryder Cup is Wyndham Clark, because, you know, there's been some talk that I've heard of, hey, we don't have a ton of high energy guys on this team outside of JT. And when Jordan's with JT, those two guys kind of get together. But, you know, Xander and Patrick Cantlay, pretty even keel. Scotty, pretty even keel. You know, most of those guys seem pretty kind of, they don't kind of get too high or too low. Ricky, same way. And Wyndham strikes me as a guy that when he gets going can bring a ton of energy. When we saw his reaction to winning the U.S. Open and just the outpouring, the release on the 18th green. And so I'm not saying this is a guy that you would have had to play in the first session, but I do kind of wonder if it would have been nice to kind of get him out there just to kind of get a feel for the energy and you know, kind of get a feel for the setting and then maybe be a guy that can be an emotional lift for his teammates as the week progresses.
You know, I like him playing the four ball. I didn't like him playing in the foursome setting. I really don't like him playing in the foursome setting all week. I think it's for your first Ryder Cup. It really does help to just play your own ball and not have to worry about just playing foursomes, because it's so awkward when you've never played it before, especially that format. It's very, very challenging. And I think it takes a lot of experience to that, which you kind of see, you know, Ricky's played plenty of Ryder Cups. Colin Morikawa played one. Then we talk, who are the other pairings? Is there any first timers that are playing?
Yes. Brian Harman's playing with Max Burns and Harman. That's right. Burns going off first with Scotty Scheffler, and then game two is Max Homa, who's also a first timer, played President's Cup.
They're first timers.
I think Zach Johnson said this. He was like, we really only see Wyndham as a first timer because Brian played on so many of the, like, you know, Brian Harman played the Walker Cup and all that. Yeah. So,
I mean, I guess the point I'm trying to make is Max Homa, Brian Harman, and we kind of had Sam Burns kind of peg with Scotty Scheffler. I thought it would be in the four ball, but let's just put Colin Morikawa and Max Homa in a bucket. You're like, those two guys are going to play the foursomes because they're very consistent every single part of their game. There's no weaknesses. Same with Brian Harman. And there's just not any weaknesses, which is why those type of players do so well in the foursomes. And that's why we're a little surprised to not see Brooks Koepka out there playing with Scotty, because there has been some weaknesses in Sam's game with mainly just the ball striking. You could argue that out of the entire group, him and JT probably had the least amount of form ball striking. But JT, to me, from what I've seen this week, has definitely, and especially in Napa too, like he looks good out there. Like he's hitting it well. To me, I'm not really as concerned about JT as other people might be.
Yeah. Well, let's get right into it, you know, going through each of these sort of matchups. So game one, as we noted there, Scotty Scheffler and Sam Burns will be playing John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. We'll be curious to see who pulls odds or evens between Scheffler and Burns, because that will be the first ball in the air at the 2023 Ryder Cup. So what's your sort of headline for this matchup, the way you kind of see this one going tomorrow morning?
Well, I think that I really do think that Scotty and Sam need to get off to a good start, because the first thing you don't want to do is get the blue on the board early. And with Rahm and Hatton, if they get it going, you know, you can get three or four down through 10 or 11 holes and you're really faced with a serious challenge, because those last, you know, I'm going to go through 14 through 18, 14 and 50 are super challenging holes, probably two of the tougher holes on the golf course. And then 16, risk reward, par four, drivable, 17, really good par three, 18, par five. So there's definitely some things that can happen on 16, 17 and 18, but you don't want to be three or four down going into 14, because those two holes to me are just not birdie holes and not holes you want to be having to play aggressive on. So I think it does lend yourself to getting, if you get a sizable lead, I think it will be difficult to overcome, but there are some things at the end of the course that definitely lend to a little bit of chaos. And everybody always talks about golf courses in general, like, oh, like this is a great match play course. I feel like every single course you go to for a match play tournament, they're like, oh, this is a great match play course. Well, this one actually really is.
Yes.
I don't really necessarily love it for stroke play, but I think it's fantastic for match play.
You know, it's funny in just seeing the kind of the aerials of it this week and looking at it. And I know that the terrain is very, very different, but when we had JT posted on whatever that was a month and a half ago, and he was talking about Diamond Creek, which is another Fazio course, and Fazio, of course, Tom Fazio's dad did this course initially, and then I did some renovations here. The signature of that course is big elevation change, hills, and huge risk reward, you know, sort of trade offs there for match play. Like, it's a really, really cool match play course. And so I wonder with this sort of course, kind of to your point, a lot of people are saying maybe not my favorite course in the world, maybe not my favorite, you know, sort of stroke play sort of setting course, but that you're going to see some really interesting propositions here for guys that can get really risky with it or play it safe. So as it pertains to that game one, you know, that Scheffler Burns Rahm Hatton matchup, I mean, do you think that what you've seen, you know, this far or thus far this week caters to any of those guys specifically for, you know, for their game?
Hatton, you know, yeah. I going into the week, I've been talking about Tyrrell Hatton. I think this golf course really suits his game. But Scotty and Rahm, you know, I expect them to play the golf course like they play every other golf course, which is really well. You know, I think it will come down to between Hatton and Burns, who plays better between those two, unless Rahm doesn't bring the form that he didn't necessarily have the best form towards the end of the year. He had great form at the beginning of the year, but if he kind of brings the, you know, just the loose ball striking that we kind of saw towards the end, then I think it'll be difficult for the Europeans to win. You definitely need, you know, a B performance from Rahm. You don't need anything lower than that. Cause I think it'll be tougher if, you know how it goes in this format. If you start missing fairways, it's going to be really difficult. And then I'll get to the golf course here after we get through the pairings, but you know, definitely to me, I think Hatton's a better driver of the ball right now with Burns than Burns. So I think that plays a factor to me, but you never know. I mean, Sam can definitely get it going. He's great in match play and he's an incredible putter. So maybe they're able to hide a little bit of his ball striking deficiencies at this moment. I'm not really sure how the odds and evens are going to play out until I really get out there and get a feel for it. But definitely interested to see what type of start that pairing gets off to.
So then game two, we have Max Homa and Brian Harman against Victor Hovland and Ludvig Åberg. And golly, I'm dying to see Ludvig Åberg in this spot. And I think
that's the match. Cool. I'm covering that match. So
that's your match tomorrow. Yeah. Fantastic. I was going to ask. So that will be a fun one to get a recap of tomorrow night. But yeah, I mean, Hovland, you know, maybe the hottest player on the planet right now. And then Ludvig Åberg, maybe the hottest young player on the planet right now, taking on guys who I guess I didn't see this pairing coming, but then earlier in the week kept hearing it. They were playing together in these practice rounds, and then here it is, Homa and Harman. What do you like about the Homa Harman pairing that makes that one make sense for Zach Johnson?
I think Harman just looked really good this week, and to me, Hatton and Harman are two guys that I think are going to have really big weeks. Harman is just hitting it really well, and one of the things, I just think this golf course fits his game, and he's a feisty competitor, and I think he's going to do great in foursomes. He's not going to get necessarily rattled by anything. You know, he's going to catch a lot of heat out there. I do know that. It's I feel like he's kind of brought it, you know, just all the talk from the Open Championship. And it wasn't not necessarily deserved being a stroke play championship. But now the fact that everybody kind of knows how he was treated at the Open Championship for really no reason, you're like, OK, he's definitely going to be a guy that the guys are going to definitely go after. But You know, I think those two together are great. You know, Homa's so consistent. He's such a good iron player. And Harman puts the ball in the fairway all the time. I mean, Homa's one of the better iron players here this week. So you have to wonder, you know, if they're just continually putting the ball in the fairways and the greens. I mean, I know Hovland and Aberg are probably going to be doing the same, but you have to wonder just the expectations that are being put on Aberg right now. Is it too lofty? Is it going to be too much tomorrow morning? Is it going to take him a match or two to get ready and really put himself in position? And I just don't think in a foursome setting that you can carry another player. You both have to be somewhat on to beat the other team, because if you're not, it's just you can lose holes just left and right.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if Homa and Harman are playing a really steady game and just kind of wearing those guys down,
right,
does Ludwig feel the need to come up with some hero shot or kind of prove that he's there and throw it away? I'm not saying he will. I wonder about a guy being in that setting for the first time and how he's going to respond to that. I mean, all indications are that you know, he's handled that well in the other tournaments he's played in, but this is a whole different stage, you know?
I mean, so. I'm expecting big things from him tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
I'm not expecting him to play poorly. That's, and you know, you could say that about a lot of players, just, you know, like the moment's too big for him. I'm putting these, like, I the only thing I bring up is expectations, because if, as long as he doesn't get in his own way, everything I've read about him, just, he is just has this quiet confidence. He's not a guy who's a talker. He's just one who just goes about his business and just gets to work and gets the job done. And that's the type of player you need, especially that's a rookie who's not, like, you know, Wyndham's been talking all week, you know, like
you got to get the mics away from Wyndham at this point.
Yeah. Like Ludwig is like hardly said a word. He's, you know, he's definitely not one to bring the attention to himself, but I think he's trying to figure out how to get involved with the crowds here this week. You know, some personalities just don't necessarily, you know, play towards crowds. There's been personalities that, like, this is exactly like they should be playing Ryder Cups every week because they play towards the crowds. And to me, like Ludwig just, and like Sepp too, like Sepp playing towards the crowds, like it's never been about Sepp. And that's, you kind of have a couple guys like that on this team that are just kind of quiet and just like going about their business.
All right. Well, so you mentioned Sepp, and so let's get to game three. And I'm just so happy we got the Husky boys pairing. I know we had two options there. We had Sepp with John Rahm and Sepp with Shane Lowry, and we got one of the two to get us going.
Yeah.
So that's
the golf ball. We talked about the golf ball. I think that made a big difference.
Srixon guys. That's interesting. Yeah. So you have the Srixon, the all Srixon pairing of Shane Lowry and Sepp Straka taking on another one I didn't really see coming. I mean, we saw the kind of indications that Max Homa and Brian Harman were going to play together earlier in the week. And maybe I just missed those for Ricky Fowler and Colin Morikawa. But, you know, why do you think Zach put Ricky and Colin together? I'm just curious your opinion on that.
I think that they actually do pair up very well together. I think Ricky doesn't have
maybe any. Also TP5 is, now that I think of it, you said golf ball.
Oh, yeah.
TP5 guys.
Okay, yeah. There you go. So play the same golf ball. And, you know, with Ricky and Colin, you know, you have expectations of Colin that he's just going to be in the fairway and be on the green. Like, you just don't have any worries as far as his ball striking goes. And, you know, with Rick, he can make so many birdies and he's so comfortable playing in this format that I'm not necessarily saying that he's going to struggle at all, but you just have to wonder where his nerves are going to be, and the fact that he hasn't played in a Ryder Cup, he hasn't played in a President's Cup in a long time. And so how is he going to be comfortable right from the get-go? And if he is, you know, I think they're going to do really, they could win between, I tell you what, it's an interesting match because Sepp and Shane are, they're going to be in a lot of fairways because Sepp hits the ball so dang straight.
Yeah.
That'll be an interesting match. I expect that one to go to 18. I think that match is going to go to 18. To me, that just screams of a match that it's pretty even in the fact that I feel like I don't think one of these teams is going to blow out each other.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I feel like we've seen when the good golf is good with these guys, it is really, really good. I mean,
That's a good point. That's a really good point between these four guys. Like, I would say all four of them have had form better than anybody here. But at the same time, like, all four,
when it gets bad, it can be bad.
That's a good point.
And I just wonder too. You were talking, I think initially we were talking about pairings for Sepp Straka because he's a drawer of the golf ball. And correct me if I'm wrong. Is Lowry's also a drawer of the golf ball, right? Or is he kind of two shot shapes?
He doesn't move it a ton. He hits a lower ball flight, if anything. Okay. I just remember it's a very, very heavy low ball flight.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's like, I think to your point, this is one where, and I think what's happening in the match could really, you know, affect the vibes a lot. I mean, that sounds like an obvious statement, but you know, if you have guys that are heating up and we could see a blowout where it's like a 4-3 situation, or if they're trading blows and it's tight, could go to the 18th hole.
Yeah. So I mean, I see blowout in the first two potentially. Like, I could see Rahm and Hatton blowing out Scotty and Sam. Mm. You know, the opposite way, if Rahm's out of commission and not playing well, I could see it going the other way. And then that second match, I could definitely see, you know, Max and Harmon definitely playing some really good golf. But
yeah,
I could definitely see the other side. Like, I could see that one going quite a long ways as well. So that first match might finish early potentially, but that second and third match, man. Whew.
Well, and then how about the fourth match? I mean, you got the anchor leg, Xander Schauffele, Patrick Cantlay. We know Cantlay's odds, so he's going to be hitting that first tee shot. And then they're taking on Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, this one feels like it could be, I don't want to say a slugfest necessarily because of the way that you know, Xander and Patrick kind of go about playing their game. But I mean, you got a guy like Rory who's, you know, the longest driver and maybe the best driver at the golf ball in the game. And then just an absolute flusher and Tommy Fleetwood. I wonder, you know, what you're looking for in this match and how you think this one's going to play out.
Oh, man. Do you have odds that we can pull up for these, all four of these matches? I'm kind of curious where Vegas has got it before. As you're looking that up, I'll kind of just talk about those four guys. I mean, to me, it just has the feeling that Tommy Fleetwood's going to have a big week. You know, this is a ball striking paradise if you're really good off the tee. And to me, Tommy, with the speed of these greens, I think he's going to be at a serious advantage. And I think him and Scotty Scheffler are two guys that come out to me as far as two guys that have struggled with their putting this, especially this year. And I think they benefit for having slower greens because didn't really have a great year putting and you're kind of thinking about your putting and you can get on some slower greens, you just naturally are more aggressive and less cautious with how you putt. And I think that'll benefit those two players. But same with Rory, you know, towards when he's putting really well, the ball is going into the hole. It's not when he's missing a lot of putts, the ball's like just barely missing on the left or right. And it's just looks like it lacks conviction. So I'm going to be looking out for how aggressive he's going to be with the putter tomorrow. And then dude, Pat and Xander, I mean, they're just going to be tough to beat, but
right.
Hard to bet against the Euros there too.
So this is interesting. So I just pulled up the DraftKings sportsbook and there are
ooh, three. Let me guess. Can I guess?
You can, but so let me set the table for you here because there are three way odds and then there are two way odds. So what that means essentially is, like, you know, if you're betting on a soccer match, you can bet for team A to win, team B to win, or you can bet on a draw.
Now,
so
what's the two way odds?
We're going to the two way odds where it's just either side to win. So, and this might be tough. These are money line odds, but
that's fine. I'll tell you what it is.
Who do you think is favored in that first match?
I bet Rahm and Hatton are a -125 favorite.
That's pretty good. So this is interesting. So they're -120. Okay. So they are more of a favorite, but Scheffler and Burns only pay -110. So it's not like you're getting anything extra on the other side. They're just, you know, and that's why it's a little bit wonky with this with style of odds. But yes, but Rahm and Hatton, slight favorites in that match.
That's kind of dumb. The fact that, like, there's not a underdog. Like, oh, I'll take the favorite. Oh, wait, they're both favorite. The juice, though, I guess.
I don't quite understand that either. Maybe it has something to do with money coming in. So, yeah, second match. What do you think?
Next match. I bet. Let's see. So it's Brian and Max. I bet it's even.
This one really surprises me.
You think
Max and Brian are +110. Victor and Ludwig -145. That's
surprising.
They have the second shortest odds of anybody of the eight groups that are playing tomorrow.
I feel like they're totally undervaluing Brian Harmon.
I think so too. And again, this could be reflective of the money that's coming in on these teams, but it's still interesting. So now let's go to Fowler, Morikawa, Lowry, Straka.
I think that's even.
Is
Fowler and Morikawa favored?
Have
just
the shortest
a little bit?
Odds of anybody playing tomorrow. They're -150 right now. Lowry Straka +110.
Oh well, I guess I could see it. That, I could see it.
Yeah,
and again, that's valuing Colin and how good like his potential could be in this match tomorrow.
Or the other way I'm thinking about that is, are there a bunch of Ricky fans out there that are just betting like crazy on Ricky and moving a line?
Well, I don't think a lot of people know about Sepp. I don't think a lot of people really know what type of form Shane Lowry's in. Everybody's talked about that Shane Lowry was the guy who was not playing well. But if you read Shane Lowry's presser this week, he was actually saying he had a great year statistically wise, and that's why he's here. So he's obviously been doing some nice things this year, just not necessarily getting the results. And then Sepp is obviously a guy who he's either hot or he's cold, but what he's really good at is ball striking and getting the ball on the fairways and on the greens. If he does that well, that's so good for this format. So again, I've kind of seen two sides now where I'm like, man, I'm obviously not. I can't pick anything or anything like that. I just like, wow, I'm just a little surprised.
So now guess the odds for game four.
Game four. Oh, man, every one of you is like, God, it's like, it's gotta be even, right? But Patrick and Xander against Rory. All right. It's going to be Rory and Tommy are going to be favored. It's going to be similar to that first match, like the exact same.
So it's Rory and you were, let's see, you had shorter odds for Rahm and Hatton in the first one. You had -125. They were -120. This one, they're a little bit. No, you guessed shorter. So this their odds, Rory and Tommy's odds are shorter. They're -130.
Okay.
And then, which again, surprised me playing a pairing as good as Schauffele and Cantlay.
That's where the energy.
They're -105. They're -105.
The reason why I was thinking it would be kind of close to that is all the energy is going to be in that match, specifically with Rory and specifically with Tommy. Those are the two fan favorites of the European side. They're going to have everybody on their side. But, you know, with Patrick and Xander, like, they're like, all right, whatever. We don't care. Like, yell at us as loud as you want.
Okay,
interesting. So very interesting.
I know. I'm glad you suggested that. That was a good little, got a little something for the gambling.
I don't like how the odd board said that first match. Like, you should be plus something. Like, you shouldn't have two like matches either. or two guys that are minus odds. It sucks.
There's a chance that I'm just a novice and I'm not, but I feel like I'm in the right place. And, you know, listen, always yell at me on the internet if I'm wrong. I can take it. I love to get it right. I got a few extra ones Ryder Cup related I want to throw at you.
Hold on before you get there. Okay. Where do you have that finishing after the first session?
Oh, you're saying prediction?
Yeah.
For points? Ooh, good question. I think if I'm looking at this now, I think it's going to be, I'm going to go 2.5 to 1.5. And I'm going to go in the Americans' favor.
All right. I'm doing the exact same, except I have the Europeans 2.5 to 1.5.
I think if I had to pick them, I'd say Rahm and Hatton win. I'd say Homa and Harmon win. I like your call on Fowler, Morikawa, Lowry, Straka. I think they push that.
Yeah, I think it's a good Schauffele, I think it's a push Cantlay match. Win.
Yeah. So I think
it's weird. That first match I think it's going to finish 4-3 and it could go either way. I really think that match is not going to be close. I just don't know which way it's going to go. Because I think Scotty could just totally outball strike those two and just Sam just making everything on those holes. And then if Sam has a good day hitting the ball, it's like, I mean, it's definitely interesting. The holes that Sam's hitting with Scotty putting, like if they can do that less than the other side, like if Scotty was just hitting the shots and Sam was just putting, nobody could beat them this week. but unfortunately, there's nine other holes that it's
there
not that
be
way.
Format. They should get really wonky with this and do a different format where it's like, we just get to pick who hits the shots. on the topic of this is really good because on the topic of this being close and scoring, we saw last week all the uproar around the tie in the Solheim Cup and the fact that the Americans retained it and got to take it back. So there's been so much made of this 30-year drought you know, the Americans winning on foreign soil. What happens if this ends in a tie and the Americans retain the cup? Do you get to say they won on foreign soil for the first time in 30 years?
Yeah.
You do, but is it did they win or did they retain the cup?
They got the cup. So yeah,
they got the cup, but it's a semantics game, right? Is it like, they actually,
let's just not have a tie. You know, let's just stop putting it into the air.
Okay. All right. Perfect. That brings me to my next thing which is, I think there should be presses in the Ryder Cup. I guess he's going to avoid ties. I think there should be presses. You go two down, you can throw one on, and then you just double up the points.
Then Jordan and JT need to go out tomorrow morning then.
That's what I'm saying. You got these guys got playing games all week long where they're throwing presses on. Let us have presses in the Ryder Cup. And then every year it's a different score. It's completely different. Gosh. I think it'd be amazing. It should just be like two down autos or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
Or maybe one down autos to really make it. And then
I love automatic one down.
The players have to keep the card though. Like they have to keep track.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to get to the golf course and a few other items too, as well. Cause I know you have some notes on that. How about Vic's ace on the par four today?
Practice. Stupid. Time. Dumb. But it was a second shot apparently. But still, who cares?
Oh, we threw down another ball. I was not aware of that. Yeah. 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 That's a good three, Vic. Good job, bud.
Nice stupid. Birdie.
And then what do you have for us on the course that we haven't already covered? I mean, you talked a little bit about like the risk reward stuff. Is there, you know, we saw the rough got cut down from, I think I heard somewhere that Ricky Fowler was saying that it went from like 8 inches to 5 inches in the long area. Anything else that we should just kind of be on the lookout for
as
we
now? It just, I mean, fairways is going to be super important this week and definitely something that, I mean, you have to start with that. Fairways are going to be important. To me, the green complexes are very challenging. I think, if you're just like a half club off, left, right, short, long, you can have some very tricky putts out there. And I think the players that have really good days with their irons, you can really make a bunch of birdies. Not a ton of holes are going to be halved. Or you're not going to win too many holes with pars out there, in my opinion. But there's some very challenging shots, specifically the drivable holes. To me, are you wouldn't think they're that hard, but they kind of are because they're weird, awkward numbers, and they're perfect three woods for the most part. But the way they set up, the way the water is on two of them. So number five, there's water short of the green, and then it kind of runs up to the left, and the green sits kind of shallow, and it's a perfect like full three wood. But if you miss your three wood at all, it's going in the water. Or if you try to hit this three wood a little harder than normal, then next thing you know, you toe one, next thing you're in the water. And the other drivable hole, there's three of them, but 11's like really not that drivable. You just get it up around the green. But 16, dude, 16 is going to be incredible. Like incredible. It's gonna be one of the best Ryder Cup holes of all time.
My next question to you was going to be, is there a hole that we're all going to fall in love with as Americans?
16.
Is 16 the answer? Okay.
There's just so much that could go right and wrong.
Can you just describe it like tee to green so we can.
Yeah. It's like today it was, it sits about 12. Let me get my book out. So today it was like 268 to the front.
Okay.
It plays down 16 yards. And so it was 290 yards to the front that plays down 17, excuse me. So that's sitting at right at about two. I can't do quick math on a podcast, apparently.
Yeah,
273. So 273 front. And then there's this a fairly big creek that runs along the green's edge to the right, like up and to the right. Okay. And this green shapes. Here, I'll show you a picture.
Okay. All right, cool. Yeah, here we go. This is on YouTube.
You see how that green shapes
Okay,
to the back right part of the green, so the front left to the back right,
That creek's cutting across the fairway there, and then what is it? It's opening into like a larger body of water on the right side of the green?
No, it's just a consistent size creek up the right.
Oh, just all the way up the right. Okay. Oh, I got it. That's okay. And then a short right greenside bunker on the right. And then I assume you're trying to drive.
So this might be opposite the way you're looking at this.
Okay.
So is it backwards for you?
No, because I see the creek running across the right side of the green, and then I see two bunkers.
There's a bunker just short of the green, but nothing short right of the green. The bunkers are all left of the green.
What about that bunker right there, just on the front part of the green, short of it? Yeah, right there.
That would be short of the green. Short right would be.
Oh, got it. Short center. Right. Semantics. Okay.
Yeah.
My fault. Yeah. I'm.
So you see those bunkers over there on the left. That you can get up and down out of those bunkers. And a lot of guys are going to end up in those bunkers and make a fairly, I'd say, a medium up and down. Like, it's not that difficult.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The really challenging part about this three wood is that it's about 273 to the front. And when you're hitting that shot, typically, especially for a normal three wood, well, most guys hit straight balls to draws.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you don't see many guys fading three woods. It's just a hard shot to hit. And
that's what
when you try to fade a three wood, that creek, yeah. I mean, I've seen balls end up in that creek the entire week. And
now what's the carry on that creek? Is that coming to play at all? Like if you're trying just to land in that area, that kind of moat area short of the green, is that a different club?
Yeah, no, it three wood easily carries that. It's about, let's see, to cover it, it's about 240 to cover that creek that goes through the fairway. So
if you're talking about risk reward options on this hole, you're either going to hit a three wood and go for the green, or you're going to do what? Are you going to leave it short of that 240 number and hit an iron? Or
you might see some people hit an iron off that tee. I think everybody's going to try to hit the shot like it's a par five, you know, like you're going for it in two and you're just trying to hit a fade off the left side of the green. But you know how it goes when you try to fade a three wood, it's easy to get it spinning out to the right, or bail and hit that one that's either in the heel where it pulls to the left, or you just hit a gross shot out to the left. And then the further left you get away from the green, the harder then the next shot is. But if you take the shot on and you decide, like Rory, he may decide, I'm going to aim at the middle of this green and hit my push draw and start it over the creek. Problem is, it's just such an aggressive shot to take.
Yeah.
And one that you wouldn't want to do in a foursome setting, but in a four ball, I would have Rory get up there, hit first, play as aggressive, like he's playing at home, and try to take the shot on. And there's going to be a lot of holes like this where whoever your aggressive player is, let them get up there and try to play as aggressively as they can. And I think that's what we're going to see in this golf course, is with players that have all this length and play aggressively and go make a bunch of birdies, the four balls are going to be really incredible. I think you're going to see a lot of great shots. I think the foursomes you may see, I don't think it's just hard to play this place. It's hard to, like, you're either conservative out here or you're aggressive. And there's no really in between. You kind of get stuck out here because the way this golf course shapes with dog legs, it can be really challenging when you kind of get stuck in between.
I mean, when you say cut three wood, drivable par four, first place my head goes is the playoff, the PGA Championship at Southern Hills on 17 a couple years ago with Justin Thomas hitting that three wood in there.
Yeah, that's sick. You're not going to see anybody hitting a driver. Like, nobody's going to be hitting a driver.
But I mean, that feels like a shot that JT has in the bag, you know.
Yeah,
you
see him for sure.
New session. So, 100%. I mean, I'm sure a lot of other guys too, but you know, in terms of that shot shape, that's awesome. I mean, I was very curious which holes we're going to kind of stand out in 16, you know,
like 17 is a great par three. And then 18, it reminds me a lot of 18 at Kapalua, place somewhere where you just like, that it doesn't get all that.
Left,
it doesn't,
yeah.
It's not quite as pitched down when the fairway where the ball runs forever. Uh-huh. But the way the second shot is, because one of the things out here is there's a ton of elevated lies. Like, you're either uphill, you're side hill, like, and then you're having to shape it the other way. So there's a lot of shots out there that are super tricky because of that. And a lot of holes where you're hitting uphill iron shots, I would probably count 5 to 6 or so, which is a lot for a course.
So interesting. So how do you adjust for that? Because you're going to hit it. It's going to be higher and spinnier, and it's not going to go as far. Correct?
Yeah. And if you do miss the fairway and you hit it in the rough, the ball has been coming out super slow out of the rough, where you're not going to get any type of jumper to where you can even really get it on the green. You're just going to be ripping at it. And a lot of these greens, especially the ones that have the uphill second shots, have huge runoff areas in the front of the green that come those will roll a good 40 yards away.
So if you hit that high spinny shot and you don't get the number right, that thing's coming all the way back.
Yes. And there's probably there's a runoff area on, I would say, 12 of the 18 holes in certain areas, like whether it's left or right or short of the green. But I would say majority would be of those 12 or 10 to 12 holes would be in the front of the green where it's coming back. So when you talk about balls coming out of the rough,
scrambling is going to be important for a lot of these guys that get in bad spots.
Yeah, 100%. And there's some holes with some forced carries. You know, the drivable ones are all obviously forced carries over water. And then you have the eighth hole, which I think is one of the most difficult holes on the course. It has, I think it's 500 plus yards. And Patrick Hanley had a driver 7-wood into that hole over water on the second shot. So if you miss that fairway, it's a layup. So it's just, it's a really good mix of easy holes, medium holes, and hard holes. And they're kind of sprinkled in a good wave. Like there's no stretch of the golf course that's necessarily, it's like balance. I would say that like the front nine's not easier than the back because they all have their good mix of easy and medium and hard holes, which I think makes for runs and match play a little tougher because you know what I mean? Like wouldn't you think that would be difficult to kind of, really, because if you finally get to an easy hole and you've been playing hard holes, you're like, man, okay, we can have with a birdie and go to the next and get our momentum back.
Well, I think it's the thing that I find interesting about it is you were talking earlier about how the latter half of the golf course gets really tough and how you don't want to be down going into that portion of the course because there's not a lot of holes where you can make birdie. But I think you could also flip that and think about that where, hey, if you're holding on to a lead and it's getting nervy and you make a mistake on a tough hole, you're opening the door. So I'm just so intrigued to see how this thing plays. But I think what you've described, we have the opportunity for some really cool, compelling golf because it is that weird mix of sometimes you're going to see a big comeback and sometimes you're going to see guys that give it away and whatever it is, it should all be entertaining.
Yeah, I'll give you the back nine. So like 10 is a very difficult hole. 11's a drivable par 4 that's going to be a birdie hole. 12's a super easy par 5 that's a birdie hole, eagle hole potentially. 13's like a wedge par 3. It doesn't fit the golf course at all. And everybody's going to make birdie on
how
it.
Short?
It's 130 yards to the front of the green, maybe 160 to the back.
Any intrigue to it at all?
No, there's nothing interesting about it at all. It's the worst hole in the course. And so you go from you go from a pretty difficult 10th, drivable hole at the 11th, which is most likely a birdie's going to win that hole. 12 could win with an eagle or birdie. 13 super easy. And then 14 and 15 are very difficult par fours. Mm. I watch Burnsy hit one on 15 from 230 today to an elevated green. So very difficult 15th. And then 16 has the chance to make a 2 or a 6. And then 17's a great par 3 where you just got to get up there and hit an incredible 6 or 5 iron potentially, or 7 to 5 iron for a very narrow green. I think that's going to be the most challenging shot down the stretch where you just have to sit up there and you just have to hit the shot because there's no necessarily trouble, but the green's so narrow you can't hit it offline. And then 18.
Where's the green kind of shape off the tee? Is it kind of a right to left?
And it's
left
dead right? Straight. Dead straight. Narrow. It's probably 10 yards from left to right. There's a big slope about 25 yards into the green. And there's a massive steep slope off the left that if you pull it left, it goes about 30 yards down the hill, tough up and down.
Runoff deal. Yeah,
and then if you miss right of the green, you can't get up and down because it's so pitched from right to left.
Wow.
And then 18 is straight downhill. And if you miss the fairway, you can end up in some really funky spots to where layups can even be challenging, where you can barely move the ball if you got a bad lie. But you could also catch a break off 18 tee if you miss the fairway. You can end up down the cart path into some areas that are trampled down. So that second shot's going to be really cool. Lake just short left, and you can win with a 3 or you can win with a 6. You know, it's like it's just kind of some crazy stuff that could happen there. But
you're painting, like I said, Rembrandt right now, man. I'm just loving it.
A lot of birdie opportunities.
It's vivid. It's fantastic.
A lot of birdie opportunities. There's some good hard holes, though, as well, to kind of mix in there to keep guys honest and hitting really good golf shots to win their matches. And, man, I'm pumped. I'm really excited.
As you should be. Well, I think that's a pretty thorough coverage of our pairings tomorrow, games tomorrow, the course itself. So Of course, we're going to have, after tomorrow's play, you're going to be back here. We're going to recap, do about a 15-minute journal of sorts like we've done for past majors, where we're going to kind of just recap all the day's action. So look forward to that in the feed. But yeah, I mean, Smiley, look, we got a lot of match play coming up. Give me some Hope Valley Men's League match play motivation, dude. Set the scene for me a little bit here. Give me some juice to go with. Something for the Team Europe and Team USA boys. Match play mood right now. What do you got for me?
Man, I don't know. I don't think anybody cares. I'm being quite honest, man. Like, I don't think anybody came here to hear about your summer league or whatever league you're in.
That's perfect. I'll just be standing over the TV.
Is that the motivation
like,
you needed?
Just be like, hey, man, nobody cares about this. Nobody cares. You really shouldn't stress about it too much.
I think you should. I mean, go give it your best, but I think you go.
But nobody cares. That's great, man. That's great. That's what I need.
I kind of care. I'm here for the content, but yeah. You know.
But largely nobody cares, so.
I'll give it a 2.5 out of 10.
Well, there you have it. Your Ryder Cup preview of the Smiley Show. We appreciate you all listening, and we will see you back here tomorrow.
The Smiley Show is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast.